Chairperson, I'm not quite sure to what extent members have been briefed previously. You mentioned that last year there was a briefing, so if you'll indulge me, I will try and go through some of the main aspects of the amendment, just to clue you in, and then the legal advisors and the DDG who is with me, and the other officials who are here can ably answer some of clause by clause questions, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, Chairperson, my apologies yet again. I do have to leave to catch a plane this afternoon, so I have to leave here by about 2:15, whether we're finished or not. So I will leave you and be able to hands of the official. Chairperson, to begin with, I think it's always important that we reaffirm our commitment, our steadfast commitment to the protection of refugees, as we have undertaken certain international responsibilities. We see ourselves as part of a brotherhood and sisterhood of nations, and as such, all of us have certain common obligations, despite the fact that each of us are sovereign states. And this duty we take rather seriously as a country. But you may know that as far as the refugee system in South Africa is concerned, South Africa ranks amongst the countries that have the most number of refugees coming to our shores. Now, clearly, on the one hand, if there were that many refugees, we need to make the necessary arrangements as a country and comply with our international obligations. But as you know, those of you who have been out to our refugee centers, you will know that most of the applications that we receive every day, we receive hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applications every day. Most of them are actually not from genuine refugees. And really and truly speaking, what this does is that it clogs up the system to such an extent that genuine refugees then tend to suffer, because they are the ones who then have to wait endlessly for their applications to be processed and to really be offered that coverage of protection that, because in the meantime, they're all vulnerable. So our focus this year, as far as refugees and is to try and make the system work better, work more efficiently, while complying with all of our duties as far as the international obligations are concerned. Now, that's not an easy task, as you would imagine, because not only do we have those international obligations, we're also a constitutional state. So every single decision that we take can be subject to judicial review. And most of our decisions most of our actions are actually taken on review, simply because in the sphere of migration as a whole, and refugee status in particular, you're dealing with people who are really desperate and who would move out to acquire a certain right that our country has to offer, whether they are refugees or not. So just to start at that point, Chairperson and Honourable Members, just to refresh your memory around what it means within the parameters of our law and within the parameters of international convention, what a refugee is. A person who is a refugee must have a well-founded fear of being persecuted, a well-founded fear. In other words, somebody who comes to our offices and says, I fear being persecuted, is not necessarily, so we have to interrogate whether there is some basis for that fear. The person must feel persecuted on the basis of the following: his race or her race, her gender or his gender, tribe, religion, nationality, political opinion, or membership of a particular social group. So that's the second leg of the test. So you have to on the basis of some of these things, would you then say that you are persecuted? So if, for example, you're a baker and somebody doesn't like your baking and they threatened to kill you in your country, that doesn't make you necessarily a refugee, okay, because you don't fall within those categories. The person must be outside of the country of his or her nationality, must be unwilling or unable to avail himself or herself of the protection of the country of origin, and or not having a nationality and being outside the country of his or her former habitual residence is unable or owing to such fear, unwilling to return to it. Again, those are all tests that get applied. The second large category, now that's the one large category. The second large category is basically when your country is invaded by foreign forces, such as happened in Iraq, for example, when that country was invaded and people no longer feel safe in that country. So that's the second one, where owing to foreign domination or occupation or aggression, there is a serious disturbance of what we call public order. Now, we all understand what public order is, that your systems are working, your postal office works, your schools works, all of those things work, your police stations work. When that is disrupted in your country, you've been occupied or there's been foreign aggression, well, then you would qualify for refugee status. Then the last one is that if somebody who is a spouse of a refugee, now, again, we must remember that this is somebody who has been married, who now suddenly is persecuted and falls within these categories, then flees to a country and says, this person is my spouse. I may be a member of a political organization, but my spouse doesn't necessarily have to be. But because we are married, that person is also entitled to refugee status. So those are the three broad categories. Now, when people come to our refugee centers, there's one of three determinations that gets made when the application is scrutinized and the person is interviewed. There's three possibilities in terms of our legislation. The first is, well, we agree you're a refugee, welcome to South Africa, we give you status. That's your first category. Your second category is what we call manifestly, let's do this. We call it unfounded. Now, what is unfounded? To give you an analogy, if I were to go to a bank and I were to apply for a loan for 100,000 rand, and I say in my application form, I have got a collateral of 100,000 rand in the form of my vehicle. Please, would you give me a loan? And I produce whatever documents and comply with the procedures. The bank then does its own investigation based on the information that I give to the bank, and it says, but we valued the car that you've got, and unfortunately you have not looked after your car as well as you should have. And yes, ordinarily a car of that nature would be worth 100,000 rand, but in your case it's worth 75,000 rand, and sorry, we decline your application based on the fact that you have not now complied with our requirements. That would be what we would term an unfounded application. So in other words, the person broadly complies with some of these aspects of it, but we find upon investigation that, look, there's something just, it doesn't work, okay? So my baker, in that, he may very well have a well-founded fear people want to take his life because he bakes bad bread, but he doesn't fall within the category. So that's your unfounded. When somebody gets an unfounded decision, he or she can apply to the appeals authority in terms of the Act to appeal that decision. That is an internal mechanism. And the appeals body authority, as you are aware, is also mentioned in the Act. So it's part of the instrumentation of the refugee centers. All of our appeals authority members who are currently in their positions are all lawyers. So that gives you a level of comfort to know that when you go and appeal, people will take into consideration all of the legal aspects and make a determination. If, for example, the appeals authority still finds that the person is not unfounded, the application is unfounded, well then we usually would deport, but of course, this being a constitutional state, people are at liberty to go to court and ask for judicial review over the entire process, which is usually what happens as well. Coming now to the third category, which is what we call manifestly unfounded. Again, to use the analogy, you want to go and get a loan from a bank, or you go to APSA and you say, I'm filling in this form, which says bank loan. And you fill out the form, and then it transpires that actually what you want is APSA to come to your home and fit in a telephone line. So in other words, this is a manifestly unfounded application. Something that will not even stand up to the most basic scrutiny because you do not comply with any of these three categories. There we feel, and this is now where one of the amendments come into play. Previously what happened was we took this matter on review, automatic review, to the Standing Committee on Refugee Affairs, called SCRA. Would go on automatic review, and then thereafter the person would still have another opportunity to go to the appeals board, which just clogs up that appeals process tremendously. If somebody doesn't have a hope in hell, pardon the expression, to be successful, we really feel that the internal appeal process is worth really nothing, and what that does is it clogs up the system quite a lot, because appeals take much longer than review. So in this legislation, what we do is we do two things. We say, firstly, we're doing away with the SCRA, and we say the DG, because in terms of PAJA, actually it's the DG that you would apply to. The DG will have delegated officials at each refugee center dealing with these reviews. The reviews of the manifestly unfounded applications will end there. If they then want to take this thing up on judicial appeal, of course, everybody is at liberty to approach our courts in this country. But we really feel that this will ease the burden on the appeals authority. So that's the first issue. The second issue pertaining to the decision making. Now, this is another problem that we have found that happens and pertains in our refugee centers. We have, as you know, people called RSDOs, Refugee Status Determination Officers. These people were the ones who would do the interview and make the decision as to whether the person has got a founded, unfounded, or manifestly unfounded application. We feel that having looked around the country, you see, if you take a founded decision, you've made a decision, you've said yes. If you've taken a manifestly unfounded decision, you've said no, literally. But if you say unfounded, it almost is that you haven't really taken a decision. Why? Because it goes on automatic appeal, automatic review and appeal, right? And that isn't a decision as such. And we find too many of those decisions are actually in that middle category. And the reason for that is we believe that our RSDOs are far too junior. They are not people who are highly skilled, highly trained. Most of them have not finished university, had a degree and so on attached to their name. They are very basic officials who are trained in public administration, but that's about it. So what we want to do with this legislation, honorable members, is we want to introduce what we call a refugee status determination committee in each refugee center. That committee, it is hoped, will be manned or womaned by people who are highly skilled professionals, people who are experts in international relations, foreign affairs, people like our former ambassadors who have very specific country knowledge of a particular country where we know we're getting very many, many, many applications from. We would choose people who understand that country. Because when somebody is sitting in front of you and you are interviewing that person, and that person says, I come from a particular region, let's say, for argument's sake, from Somalia somewhere, and I come from the northern Somalia, and there's a lot of fighting going on there, and I feel unsafe and so on. The person on the other end must be familiar with northern Somalia, must know what is happening there in order to test whether the person is saying things that are true or not true. At the moment, we don't have that capacity. And so we want to build that capacity by bringing in people who are very, very knowledgeable about the conditions around the world and so on. So the status determination committees will be in existence in every refugee center. What we do not want, though, because we talk about a status determination committee, does not mean that there will be a room full of people here dealing with every single application, because that will further impede the process. What we're going to do is to hopefully, if you all pass this legislation, is to divide these committees up into subcommittees. So you could have a subcommittee of two people, or one person for that matter, depending on skill of the person. That, well, maybe we would have a subcommittee that deals with manifestly unfounded, or deals with unfounded and so on. And the current RSDOs would be utilized to prepare the files and as admin officers, really to present a fully fledged application before the committees. So that's how we envisage this particular thing. Incidentally, on this issue of the subcommittees, there is a, having come from the NA, we noted that in Section 24 there was an area that we are proposing that you add a technical word or words to that section which the legal advisor will brief you on. Basically something like where reference is made to the status determination committees, we say or the subcommittee or any of its subcommittees. Okay, lovely. So that's what we are hoping you would approve. It's something we are proposing to you, but of course it's open for you to consider. The reason for that is we don't want the courts, because as you know, everything we do gets litigated. We don't want the courts to say, by the way, the Act says a status determination committee, so all 10 members must sit in one application. We actually want there to be efficiencies in the system as well. So we thought without that, there is that possible interpretation that the whole committee must sit in every application, and we think that's a dangerous thing. Okay. Secondly, Speaker, while I'm on the proposal, we had received, after the National Assembly had gone through its process, we'd received an input from the chairperson of the Appeals Authority, who was saying that in a similar instance to what we're trying to prevent with the Status Determination Committees, what they do currently, because they are all legally qualified, they have people sitting individually on appeals, because if they were to sit as an appeal authority again, we would just have no efficiencies. They'll process 10 files a day when, in fact, 800 people are walking through the door every day, and the backlogs will just grow. So what they do is they sit individually on cases, except where they think that the case is very complicated and so on, then the chairperson makes a determination to say, well, three people are going to sit in this matter, okay? So that has always been the intention, it's always been the practice. It seems that what is now being challenged at court is after they've made their decisions and some people have been refused, they're now going to court to say the appeals authority ought to have sat as an entire body in the appeal and one person found to do the job. So we want to make that wording. We think the wording is clear enough as it is to allow them to do that, but just to make it airtight, he is proposing some other wording which we have brought to you today for your consideration as well. The other issues, and those are the only two proposals that we are bringing that are new outside of what the National Assembly has done. Chairperson, the other, broadly speaking, the other areas pertain to registering children who are born of refugee parents. So if you have received refugee status, you are living here, we have to regularize children who are born from refugee parents. We do not want to make them necessarily citizens of our country because, remember, when you're a refugee, things can normalize in your country at some stage and you may want to go back to your country. In fact, we are having a delegation of one of the countries, if I'm not mistaken, I think it is the DRC or something. Is it the DRC? People are coming, officials are coming from that country trying to entice refugees in this country to go back because things have normalized to such an extent that they feel that people can now make use of the protection of their state of origin. So that is always a possibility, but we equally don't want these children, while they are in South Africa, not to be registered and not to have the benefits of things like hospitalization, our health services, our social welfare services, if need be, and of course schooling, very importantly. So they do need to have some kind of documentation. So what we provide here is that is a process whereby those children can be registered, but not on the National Population Register in the births and deaths register, okay? And that they have to then, once they register their children within 30 days of birth, which is exactly the same as South Africans, they must then take the birth certificate and go and submit it to the refugee center where they went initially so that the pairing can happen. So that's the other amendment that we've brought. I think it's the last one that I'm going to speak to, and that is essentially the matter of who determines status and the change of status. So if, for example, as you know, if a refugee is in the country having been granted status, they may, for example, become criminals or do things that we don't agree with as a country, in which case there is a discretion currently in the legislation to withdraw that status. And that discretion is given to the DG. Now, it was felt that is not an administrative decision. It's a political decision. It shouldn't be a person who is an official, a technician as such, deciding to withdraw somebody's status. There must be some basis against which the national interest of the country is taken into account, and that must be a political decision. Oftentimes we find refugees, for example, going into our neighboring states without going through the ports of entry and creating risks for those, our neighbors. That has a political connotation for us because we are harboring them and they are subject to our protection. So those kinds of matters, before a decision is taken, it should be a political decision, not a technical decision. So there you'll see that there are some areas where we swap the DG for the minister. I'm not sure if I have dealt with all of the, I'm looking to my officials to see if they agree that I've dealt with all of the major things.
Yes.
I think I have.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot, Deputy Minister. I think you have painted a very good picture reminding us of this amendment bill. What is it all about, the structures, the people that are involved, and also the functions and roles of those people in this amendment bill. And it also reminded us of the detailed discussions and vibrant discussions that we had with this bill when we had them last year. So what I want us to do now, I'm trying to make an appeal from the members that what we need to do now is to focus exactly on the clauses. I know, Deputy Minister, we have touched on them, but we need to take them one by one so that we can hear that members, they agree to all these new clauses that are suggested by the department. And also, yeah, I can see that we've got about three of those clauses. If you can go straight on them and go one by one so that we the committee can agree on those. Honorable Ranto?
I just want to understand clearly what the Deputy Minister said on registration of birth of the refugee children. Are they registered in our Home Affairs offices, and then their registration taken by the parents to the refugee center? Does the refugee center not have a center for their newly born refugees children? Just want to clarify.
No, the member is quite correct. That's basically the process, is that you would have to go to your ordinary Home Affairs office, just like South Africans do, and register your child there. What we will do there is, instead of putting your child, like South African children, will go onto your national population register, because those are where all citizens are. These ones will go onto the births and deaths registration. So equally, it's a registration. We've got a record of the child. And then the certificate must be taken to the refugee center, because remember, that's where your status is determined, so that this thing can be attached to your status as well, so that if anything happens in the future, for example, you then get naturalized, then your child is also naturalized. If you're going back to your country, well, then your child will also follow you in that.
Thanks a lot, Deputy Minister. I'll allow only Member Mashamito will be the last one. If we have any other questions, members, I want to request that we should write those questions. The members will be debating on this amendment bill. We will forward the questions to those members so that they can be responded to by the Minister when she responds on the bill. Member Mashamito.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. My question is in relation with the amendment. How the amendment itself is going to affect the present regulations under the intended amended act. I just want to check if there will be any, you know, changes in terms of regulations which the current refugee officers were working under. I just want to check those regulations. Thanks.
Okay.
May I just get clarity? Are you referring to the basis on which a decision is made whether to grant somebody or not grant somebody? Is that what you're talking about? The basis remains the same. It's only the instrument that is taking that decision that gets changed. So in other words, instead of an RSDO, as I said, that person is a junior official, we now have people who are far more professional and skilled to take that decision. But the basis on which that has not changed, really.
Okay.
It's okay. Okay, can we, Deputy Minister, can we quickly go straight to the clauses exactly?
Okay.
One by one, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. As there is a one pager that was presented to members, as the Deputy Minister indicated, the amendment relating to the Refugee Appeals Authority to allow members to sit individually and determine appeals will be a new one, because it's not currently amended in the bill that comes from the National Assembly. And the wording thereof, it will be an amendment to Section 8C of the Act. Then it will read, an appeal contemplated in subsection 1A, there is currently the use of the word must. We're proposing that it should be shall be determined by, then we're adding the underlined words also, a single member or such number of members, and the rest is still in there. So that will be able to allow a single member or. Then the other two areas were under section 24 that Deputy Minister mentioned are contained in clause 26 currently, where the Act. Where, for example, it's in subsection, it's section 24.2, which currently reads, when considering application for asylum, the refugee status determination officer that we're replacing with the status determination committee, then the new words that, as Deputy Minister indicated, will be, or any of its subcommittees, so that there is an establishment and decisions could be taken by subcommittees. So that will also appear in subsection 3, similarly, to add the words for any of its subcommittees. So those are the amendments. And the state law advisors will properly draft it into this. It's a C list for the purpose of the DP. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Deputy Minister, for the clarification of the exact clauses that we need to focus on. Then at this stage, I think I will allow the different committee members who are coming from different provinces to vote on this amendment bill. Yeah, all of them, yes. Ne? Yeah. So do we start with Limpo? Oh, okay. Okay. Ehen?
Sorry. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Okay.
If I'm understanding you correctly, ma'am, call me out of order. If you wanted to vote on these amendments now, I just wanted to make a comment before you do that.
No, you can, but you must remember that we are on having a pressure of time. You can quickly do that.
I fully understand that, ma'am.
Yes.
No, I just want, and also with the benefit of the Deputy Minister here, the words pertaining to the Status Determination Committee or any of its subcommittees, I see it's only used at certain places where you find Status Determination Committee, not everywhere. It looks like it's only where the decisions are made by the Status Determination Committee. And now that can be done by a subcommittee as well. But there's one or two that I've now just picked up, and I'm just going through the bill now, where we're not making those amendments. I'm just worried that that could cause problems, and there's a specific one where they do make a decision, but then that decision cannot be made by a subcommittee. And if that's in order, then fine. But otherwise, if it must be everywhere where that can be either the Status Determination Committee or a subcommittee, I think we can consider just amending the definition of a Status Determination Committee. But if it's not, then fine.
Okay. Deputy Minister, can you respond to that?
I don't want to belabor the point. This is exactly the discussion we spent some time on this morning with the legal advisor. And drafted. Let me just briefly explain, Chairperson. You see, in the definition, when it refers to the Status Determination Committees, it refers back to Section 8, is it? Section 8.2. In Section 8.2, it says, a Status Determination Committee shall be, or words to this effect, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't got the bill in front of me, but... Ah, thank you very much. Where is it? No, but where's 8.2? It just says, in the definition, it refers to Section 8.2. Then when you go to 8.2, it says, each refugee reception office must consist of at least one status determination committee established by the DG in the prescribed manner to consider and deal with applications for asylum in accordance with whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay? Now, when we say as prescribed, we obviously mean regulations. Mm-hmm. Now, in the regulations, we will make reference to the subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that one is taken care of. The problem that we have is when you go to Section 24.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Section 24, and I'm reading now from the Principal Act, if I would just get my Principal Act out. Section 24 talks to how the at this point it talks about the status determination officer, but of course we're changing it to the committee, right? But it talks about when that person makes a decision. So when considering an application, the status determination officer must have regard for rights, it must have regard to this, that, and the other. Now, if you do not say there, the status determination committee or its subcommittees, it still means that it's the status, there's still a small area where you can interpret it in the way these people are interpreting what is happening in the appeals currently, which means that they can argue before the court to say that it's the status determination committee as a whole that must sit and deal with applications. So that is where we want to make it quite clear that it's these subcommittees that would be empowered. In other words, this is an empowering clause that Parliament is giving to the subcommittees as well, that they would also be able to take those decisions. Remember I said to you that we're going to have special subcommittees for each of that, whether it's manifestly unfounded, or founded. So we want them to be, the subcommittees, to take those decisions. And if you don't say it in the Act, it leaves that room open for somebody to go to court and say, but the Act is not clear on this matter. It actually means the whole status determination committee must sit when it makes applications. You can have subcommittees, but they're not empowered to take decisions. That's what we want to cure as far as 24 is concerned.
Thanks a lot for the explanation. I hope it has clarified all the issues that have been placed before us. And can I go straight to the voting session now? And starting with, no, I'm not allowing any questions, ma'am. I'm not. Can I start with the Limpopo province to vote on the issue?
Right, Chair.
Thanks. Gauteng?
State law is trying to advise us as a select committee, and he's still not yet convinced, and we're voting. The ones that they were engaging with in the morning was the department's lawyers.
I don't know that he's not convinced because he hasn't said anything. I asked the question that has he been clarified. He has said nothing. And I think in future the state law, parliamentary law advisor must do its work before we come to a meeting and get a briefing from the department, because it's really, really putting us in a very difficult position now on what exactly, how to proceed with the meeting. Vote. Eastern Cape? Thank you. Mpumalanga?
I'm voting.
Thanks. Northwest?
Vote in favor.
Yes. Member Western Cape? Thank you very much. Yeah, connect that. So we will be retrieving these things when we want to.
I'm in favor.
Okay. Come here. Okay. We are still waiting for Gauteng before we go to the state law advice.
With doubt.
There's nothing like that. You are only in doubt because the state law advisor is silent on. He has agreed, actually, he's not silent.
Can we have a response then?
Yeah. I'm going to allow him to make a response.
Yes. I'm the parliamentary law advisor, man.
Parliamentary law advisor, correct. You must have advised us.
On how to vote, sir?
No.
On the question of the committee. Okay, wait, Mnube. You have asked a question, or you have made a comment, the deputy minister has responded. Then I went back to you to check whether you have been clarified on the issues that you have checked. You agreed. Yeah?
No, ma'am, I didn't.
Okay, go on.
Thank you, ma'am. My concern, ma'am, and I understand your time constraint, my concern is that when we're looking at a decision taken, and I'm incorporating the new amendments into the amendment book.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking a decision taken by the Status Determination Committee or any of its subcommittees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. That is in 24.3.
Yeah.
If you look on page 4 of the book, that's incorporated there.
Mm-hmm.
But when we go to page 5 of the bill, we're dealing with the appeal process. Okay? At the top, line, specifically line 3, 4, and line
what page again?
5 of the bill.
Yeah, I didn't see
there we're dealing with the Refugee Appeals Authority. Now it says it may set aside or substitute any decision taken by a Status Determination Committee. Now I'm worried that if these things go before a judge, the judge will say, well, doesn't look like that appeals authority can set aside a decision of a subcommittee, because it's specified that you can take a decision either at committee level or subcommittee level, but you can only do an appeal at the committee level, not at the subcommittee level. So I was raising this concern, whether we shouldn't include the subcommittee on page 5 as well, in lines... the same insertion, but after in line 4 after Status Determination Committee, and in line 8, no, line 9 after Status Determination Committee. That's what I was thinking.
To me, that doesn't sound like it's in contradiction. Is it in contradiction to your recommendations that you have made? Can you assist us?
We don't have strong feelings either way. You see, my problem was the empowerment clause. So if you're saying that a subcommittee is not part of the Status Determination Committee, well, then that's a separate issue. But any decision of a subcommittee is obviously a delegated function of the Status Determination Committee. So any decision that is being appealed will be a decision of the Status Determination Committee. I don't mind if there's insistence on the part of the committee to add or subcommittees there, that gets added, because it doesn't really affect our problem that we were trying to cure.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think it's necessary, but if it's a strong feeling of the committee, we will abide. Chairperson, no problem.
Yeah, it won't have any negative implications on anything.
I certainly don't think so with the little time that we've had to discuss it, but I think if you want it to be absolutely correct and what is the word, spot on 100% correct and be uniform throughout
Consistent, that's fine.
But then you'll have to do an overall thing. Wherever you've got Status Determination Committee, you'll have to put all subcommittees. And as I said to you, in the definition, the subcommittee is the committee as prescribed. And in the regulations, we will say the subcommittee will consist of as many... Status Determination Committee will consist of as many subcommittees. The only thing we wanted to do is to make sure that there's no interpretation that says the subcommittees can't take a decision.
Okay, thanks a lot. There's a hand that was up here. Did the gentleman over there?
Thank you, Chairperson. I may request state law advisor, Chair. Chair, the issue that was raised by the parliamentary state law advisor, Chair, is a valid point, Chair. Because if there was no words end of its subcommittees in the previous clause, Chair, then we wouldn't have to amend on page five on clause 24B. That was, Chair, we could, Chair, insert as he has the parliamentary law advisor has advised, Chair, we could insert further words end of its subcommittees, Chair, in consequence to the previous amendment, Chair.
Mm-hmm.
That was, Chair, we could just instead, Chair, on that part, Chair. The other clauses, Chair, you're going to just insert in office subcommittee in all the clauses that deal with Status Determination Committee, Chair, because we have to look at the context of each clause, Chair. That was, Chair, I agree that on clause, on page 5, on clause 24B, Chair,
mm-hmm.
we should insert the words in office subcommittees. Thank you, Chair.
No, Chair. The word is not and, it's all.
All, Chair.
Or any subcommittee.
Or any
of the subcommittee. Yeah, we have to be
extremely careful with this law or bills. It's subcommittee. So you've got it? Yes. Okay. Thanks a lot. Is it okay? Parliamentary.
I'm happy if it goes there. I actually appreciate my colleague supporting me on that. And if the committee wants to, they can vote on it with those amendments in mind, because it doesn't take away the efforts that these amendments want to do, and it adds to it, I think.
Okay.
So if the committee wants to vote on it like that, we're not going to. I think it's good.
Okay.
Yes,
Member Chivili.
For procedures now, we already voted.
Mm-hmm.
So then you must pose the question, then we must just begin from the beginning, so that you must vote again on the proviso which was put on the table now.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how things didn't vote. We'll find another way of getting them to vote. So, yeah, with those additions now, what do we do? Because they did vote initially.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. Yes?
Yeah.
Member Mahati and Member de Villiers?
Chairperson, you know, it's so frustrating
mm-hmm.
where we find that we are seated now in this situation
mm-hmm.
because of how they
mm-hmm.
and the member decided to put us in this position and left us.
And she runs away.
You know, it's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I think, members, it will be in order for us to use the votes that we had already. Okay.
Chair, I think from your side, you must then rule in the meeting that seeing the situation of the legal advisors of Parliament about the committees and that clause, that we revise the voting. And then you can just ask every province to just give their voting again.
When outside the meeting?
No.
But we've got three provinces now.
Can I put a proposal?
Uh-huh. I'm coming to you.
Chairperson, I want to propose that in connection with the problem which actually comes from our legal advisors from Parliament, that we revise our voting
mm-hmm.
that is in connection with the subcommittees with that clause, and then ask each and every province just to go back to the voting. Thank you.
Yes, but still it doesn't answer the question that we've got only three provinces here now. It is we have to have five provinces present, yes. Member Mashamaid?
Chair, I was going to say, because earlier we voted, what will be the problem if we take those votes we voted
mm-hmm.
earlier on to support the bill with the amendments made by our parliamentary, you know, law advisor?
Additions, not
mm-hmm.
even amendments.
Yeah,
additions.
I mean additions, yes.
Yes.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, let's approach it in that fashion, that we take the votes that have been advanced by other provinces, we use them, but yeah, and do what is recommended
mm-hmm.
by the committee.
Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Do you want to say something? Oh, okay, thanks. You agree that we should take that approach. Okay, thanks a lot, members. Let me release all members. They are already standing up. Oh, okay, here's another last part. You take a second. That the report of the Select Committee on Social Services on the Refugees Amendment Bill, B30B-2010, National Assembly, Section 75, dated 24th March 2011. The Select Committee on Social Services, having considered the subject of the Refugees Amendment Bill, B30B-2010, National Assembly, Section 75, referred to it, reports that it has agreed to the bill with proposed amendments. The one that we have just dealt with. So, thank you very much, members. And now you are finally released.
You don't need a proposal and a seconder on that?
No. We voted.
Okay.
We voted, yeah. Yeah, we
used
the same vote, yes.
It's election fever, that's Mr.
Yeah.